From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present the second half of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with Middle East and Islam research specialist Raymond Ibrahim. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and his guest.
I think it's absolutely stunning to hear former President Barack Obama, who should know better, to say that Islam ought to be able to practice religion as it sees fit in the West, knowing that Islam allows a man to beat a woman to bring her into submission. It just seems so counterintuitive with respect to everything else he supposedly stands for. But it's not just him. I mean, you think of Carly Fiorina talking about the myth of the Andalusian paradise. I mean, she personified it. I mean, if it wasn't for Islam, we'd be still living in the Dark Ages. It was Islam that brought mathematics and philosophy and the culture of the Greeks through the Christian Dark Ages into the present light. You can go through these intellectual cultural elites. Barack Obama grew up in a Muslim context. He knows all this stuff. He's a historian. And yet, given the fact that he seems to be for women's rights, he's willing to go back and say that this barbaric religion ought to be practiced as modern Muslims see fit in Western democracies. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, it makes sense to me in a very kind of weird way that, you know, you may or may not agree with. Basically, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I really believe that the grand enemy for this sort of thinking is historic, traditional, cultural, Christian ethics, which have built Western civilization. So this is why someone like Obama and your average feminist white woman in America will say what you just said about how wonderful Islam is, even though they can see with their own eyes the opposite of their own claims, and read with their own eyes in the Quran and the Hadith and so forth, the opposite of their own claims, and yet lambast, you know, Christian patriarchy constantly, which doesn't do anything like that, and in fact is behind the so-called liberation of women. Because fundamentally, I really think they are ultimately motivated by a desire to demonize and thereby justify breaking away from historic Christianity. You know, you ever think to yourself, when you think of civilizations around the world, it's only the West is distinct for having such an abhorrent hatred for its own past. No one else has this break in continuity. Muslims, of course, as we know, praise and glorify their history, but so do Hindus, so do the Chinese and the Japanese. Everyone does. What is behind the fact that the one civilization that actually had a meteoric rise in the world and that abolished slavery and that did all and create, you know, brought all these baboons, you know, technology and democracy and freedom. And now it is so hated by its own people and demonized as being the absolute worst civilization ever. Now, to me, you can't explain that rationally. There's something else behind it. There's a darker force behind this sort of thinking because it is so singular, it is so irrational, it is so topsy turvy. And like I said, I believe it begins and it ends with, you look at what we call liberals, multiculturalists, secularists, feminists, atheists, homosexuals, whatever you want to call them. They all, Muslims, of course, who aren't even part of that, they all have the same common disdain for Christian cultural ethics and mores deep down inside, whether they say it or not. And that is I believe that is the driving force for what they do and what they say. It's not because they care about, you know, other people. It's not because of their humanitarian inclinations or their need to see women liberated or so forth. No, that's always the pretext that's being used for the other reason.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. I mean, what I'd like to do is sort of look at the big picture with you for a few moments. I mean, right now we look at North Korea. We'll look at what's going on with respect to the protests to our flag. As you point out, America has always been self-correcting, and yet there are so many people, I think, oftentimes ill-informed, that consider America evil, that consider the flag a symbol of hate, bigotry, and everything that's wrong with the world. Then you have the sexual revolution, of transgenderism and gender fluidity, same-sex sexuality, and the list goes on. On top of that, you have what we've been talking about specifically, illicit Islam, not only terrorism, but the demographic problem where we're self-aborting and polygamous Muslims are rushing in to fill the vacuum. You look at that toxic mixture. What do you make of what is going to happen to Western civilization with the obvious understanding you're not a prophet and one person with God can create a revolution in another direction, in the direction of changing this culture for the good? But you look at the toxic mix right now and it's mind-numbing.
Yeah, it's, you know, depending on which country, I mean, but when you say West, I agree. I mean, there's definitely a continuity. It just affects each part a little different. Some places are a little more progressive, but pun is intended, and they're progressively suffering faster, such as Western Europe, Germany. I believe what's going to happen is if the status quo, if the mentality that I, if this dominant mainstream way of looking at the world, which is basically, you know, European Christian heritage, everything is said and done, evil, everyone else, good. Okay, this overarching diamond earring worldview, which is so indoctrinated now in people's minds, Western people, of course, exclusively. If that continues, then the natural outcome, of course, is just self-extinction and suicide. And that's what you're seeing in some of these countries. It's just amazing to see in Germany or in Sweden, you know, Muslims brought in by the droves, then they go on raping sprees and have sex rings where they, you know, molest and abuse and groom thousands of, European girls and so forth. And then the police don't do anything because they're afraid of being politically incorrect or called a racist. The government doesn't do anything except bring in more. They actually tell women in Scandinavia and Germany to dye their hair, to dye their blonde hair dark so they don't stand out and warrant the attention of migrants and so forth. So that mentality, of course, is destined to extinction. And I hasten to add, I don't mind to see that, because if any elements in the Western or other world that can't stand up for itself in the most basic sense in defending its own self, its own turf, its own women and children, well, it doesn't really have much to stand for anymore. It's pretty much defunct and pointless. And it will go the way of the dodo. And I personally won't lament it because there was nothing there. Of course, I'd like to see a change. I'd like to see people wake up, open their eyes, and act on reality. But I think that's harder said than done because, you know, a lot of us in this field, we keep thinking that it's all about making rational argumentation and documentation and, you know, showing, for example, on the topic of Islam, showing people what the Quran says, showing people what Islamic history has said and done and so forth. Well, that works with rational people, okay? But I think the plague right now that's infecting much of the West is such that it's irrational. It doesn't matter what facts you show and talk about and present. Again, the idea precedes the facts, and that's all that matters. People have been so indoctrinated on these isms, multiculturalism, materialism, relativism, the idea that the beginning and end of all historic evils are the white Christian medieval man. All these ideas have become so ingrained that unless you can get them out of people's minds and make them think rationally, then there's nothing that can be done. Like I said, we can't just keep arguing it and show evidence. We've showed all the evidence you need. What more? I mean, I used to think when I was younger that, well, you know, when I wrote the Al-Qaeda Reader, for instance, it was published in 2007. I worked on it in 2005. I thought, look, this is great. Here's some Arabic documents by Al-Qaeda saying, proving their true intention, which is just jihad and subjugation and so forth, not grievances. And I honestly thought, oh, great, I am going to translate and publish this, and, you know, hopefully it'll open people's eyes. Well, it did to some people, but most people it didn't. And it's not because they didn't say that or it's not documented. It's just we are dealing now with a sort of irrationality that just transcends argumentation. It doesn't care about facts. And until something happens to that kind of thinking and people become a little more rational and look at evidence and look at facts and, you know, stop living in clouds, even as they see their people and their land being taken over and butchered, there won't really be any change.
You know what's interesting about this? You don't have to wonder what civilization would look like under Islam because of what happened in Andalusia, in medieval Spain. But even more than that point, I mean, look at your book, Crucified Again. Here we have what's, by any standard, mass genocide taking place against Christians in the Middle East. I mean, so it's not as though we have to think back to a period from, 7-11 to 1492 or something like that. We can look at what it would look like in the West by simply turning our eyes to the East.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Islam research specialist Raymond Ibrahim. Christians and Muslims can be co-citizens in ethnicity, national identity, culture, and language. But wherever and whenever Muslims are in power, explains Raymond Ibrahim, churches are outlawed, burned, and bombed, while Bibles and crucifixes are confiscated and destroyed. Freedom of speech, to speak positively of Christianity or critically of Islam, is denied, often on pain of death. Read Raymond Ibrahim's book, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Receive your copy as our thanks when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a donation to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or go online at equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Bring up religion or politics in a conversation, and often people stop being reasonable and demonize those who disagree with them. Fortunately, there are certain skills you can develop that will lead to civil discussions. Other topics include the historical uniqueness of Jesus Christ among the founders of the world's major religions, a practical guide to teaching students apologetics, understanding Nicene Trinitarianism, wrestling with God, church, and religion in the writings of Mark Twain, HBO's Westworld and the ethics of artificial intelligence, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically subjugated under the Islamic way. In Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Ibrahim explains that if the mainstream media were to report honestly on the persecution of Christians under Islam, the obvious implications that Islam is dangerously hostile to all non-Muslims would be inescapable. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org. let's rejoin Hank and Raymond Ibrahim in their conversation.
You don't have to wonder what civilization would look like under Islam. I mean, look at your book, Crucified Again. Here we have what's, by any standard, mass genocide taking place against Christians in the Middle East.
Well, it's even more than that. I mean, you're absolutely right. But look simply to the West, where you have large numbers of Muslims, and look and see what's happening there. You know, these enclaves in Australia and Germany and Scandinavia and Britain, they're basically like little third world regions. We don't even have to go as far as the Middle East, even though I agree with you. I mean, the one thing I've always liked about Islam is its unwavering continuity. Okay, from day one of its history until today, it is not changed. It follows certain themes. There has never been a time when a Muslim state or power did not attack a non-Muslim state except when it was weaker. I mean, that is historically demonstrable. Anytime a Muslim state was stronger, it went on the offensive. It was in the name of jihad and Allah. They had to, and so forth. So today, of course, you don't see the Muslim world invading Europe and attacking it because it can. Rather, you see the opposite. You see its allies, its ideological allies, who have the same enemy, bringing them in to Europe to continue what was happening before. You know, you see in Europe, for instance, you can see all the things that happen, and the apologists will tell you, well, that's just crime, or, oh, they're just desperate, they don't have enough money, they're economically impoverished, that's why they're committing crimes, et cetera, et cetera. But what do you do with the fact that wherever there's large Muslim populations in Europe now, you constantly see churches being attacked, desecrated, crosses being broken? I mean, how do you explain that? That's just hate. They gain nothing by it. They could get in trouble if they get caught. They're not robbing. They're not raping. It's just, it's a manifestation of hate. And it's happened so many times in Europe, constantly. Muslims go on rampages, destroying. In one instance in Germany, I think over one night, 50 churches were attacked and crosses broken and statues and so forth. Now, Muslims used to do that in Europe, but they did that coming in on horses and camels during warfare and jihads in Spain and in the Balkans and the Ottomans and so forth. Now, they can't do it, but you have an element that's bringing them in. And that's, of course, the much more dangerous element. As I always say, Islam in and of itself today is intrinsically weak. It's not a threat. The reason it's a threat, the reason Western people are being killed by it and oppressed by it, is because of Western people who actually whitewash it, praise it, turn the other blind eye, both here and there, as in the case of Rotherham in England, where they were the sex ring and police knew about it. They didn't want to do anything about it because they'd be racist, and then bring them in through migration and so forth. And so you see the same thing going on. And that's why really the bigger problem is what we've kind of been talking about more, which isn't the Muslim mentality and what Muslims are doing, which, you know, I give the analogy, you know, if I imagine zookeepers one day start saying, you know what, let's stop demonizing lions and saying that they just like to kill zebras. You know, they're doing that because they're hungry. We keep them well fed. They're going to get along. And then they start insisting that zebras and lions are in the same in the same cage or in the same little field. And they feed the lions a lot. And sure enough, the lions get lazy. They don't attack zebras. But then once in a while, they go and attack and kill zebras and tear them to pieces just because that's what lions do. Now, who's at fault? The lion or the zookeeper? I think the latter, obviously. The lion does what the lion does. And the Muslim jihadi does what the Muslim jihadi does. But who is enabling them? Who's empowering them? Who's turning a blind eye? And that really is where the problem starts and ends.
I think you've already said it pretty eloquently, but I think it bears repeating. I want you to reemphasize what you've just said about the fact that Islam is not that strong worldwide militarily. In other words, the military might of the West far exceeds Islamic military power. And therefore, what we are doing is we are self-destructing from within. In other words, we're opening the floodgates for a lesser power to come in and destroy.
Exactly. Look, historically, and you know, you mentioned my book, and that's exactly what it is. Historically, the West, or even Christendom, could not resist. Literally two-thirds of the original Christian territory or Christendom was seized permanently by Islam in the jihad. It wasn't because, you know, Europeans or Westerners or Christians gave it to them. They fought, you know, tooth and nail, and they got beat because there were just hordes and hordes that kept coming, different manifestations, Arabs, Turks, Tartars and so forth, always attacking Europe from every side, from the Mediterranean, from Spain, and from the east and the Balkans and so forth. And they would get very far. You know, they got, like we said, Tours deep in the heart of France. Italy was continuously raided. Rome was sacked, I think, twice in the 9th century, 200 years before the Crusades, by the way. The Vatican was attacked, and that's why there's walls around the Vatican, and yet we have an inhabitant, Pope Francis, who's constantly telling people to drop their walls, and he misses the irony of his own residence. But it was a constant onslaught, and, you know, Christians fought to the death, and then they eventually won. And now Islam is a spent force. I mean, it's what can Muslims, I mean, if there was a, if the West had the mentality of the Muslim world, it'd be over. Or vice versa, if the Islamic world had the military might of the West, there'd be no West. The West would be part of Dar al-Islam by now, a long time ago. It wouldn't even be a question. And so, yes, this is the crux of the matter. You know, Islam has been doing what Islam has been doing. But the big difference today is that whereas it did it because it could, because it was strong, and you had a rational power combating it, Christian Europe, now you have the prodigal son of Christian Europe, the secular West, going out of its way to empower Islam so that it may continue what it started when it was strong. And again, and the inescapable fact of all this is that, you know, it's Islam is really fundamentally not the issue here, because Islam could easily be neutralized. I mean, the simplest thing is I'm just, you know, ban immigration from Muslim countries. As simple as that. And there it goes, at least in the Western world. So what you're seeing, all the terrorism and all this, it is 100% enabled by Western elements.
There are some movements, and they seem very rational and erudite. I see representatives of it on Fox News as well as other news programs, but they're talking in this very intellectual way about the need for reformation within Islam. But it seems to me that reformation within Islam is simply a way of saying, go back to the roots of Islam, go back to what Muhammad was originally proliferating in terms of violence, in terms of the way women are treated, in terms of his global a jihadist enterprise. So reformation in Islam is basically saying, we'll take moderate Islam, if there is such a thing, and go back and make it radical.
Yeah, well, you see, they get away with that. And the reason they do that, and the reason it's popular, is, you know, the word reformation connotes positive change on the one hand. The other hand, the deeper reason is, again, going back to these isms that plague Western thinking, relativism. The relativistic way of thinking is such that, well, if Christianity, which must have been so bad in its historic manifestation, was able to reform, quote unquote, improve, then surely violent Islam can also reform and improve. But if you look at what the Reformation was essentially saying, okay, we're done with a clerical hierarchy. We're done with any extra biblical authority, sola scriptura. All we care about is the word of God, and we are going to read that and follow that. Okay, very good. When you do that, because the word of God is full of good things, humanitarian things, brotherly love, peace, and so forth, justice, well, when people do that, it's good. Now, if you want a reformation in Islam and the same thing on the same concepts, because that's what happened, well, that's called ISIS. That's what you're seeing right now. Because historically, Islam had what, you know, historians call a medieval synthesis. And this really affected its own self more than it did the other. But because Islam is so stringent and you know, full of draconian laws, Muslims, once they couldn't expand and enjoy the boons of jihad anymore, were left with Islam. And they kind of like mellowed it out for their own sake so they can get along. And they did all these kind of, like I said, it's a synthesis of the teachings, and they came up with new interpretations, again, just for society. Even then, the infidel, you have to warn him, kill him, etc. Okay, now what the so-called Salafis and the Wahhabis and these people who've existed from day one, these aren't a modern aberration. You know, Ibn Hanbal is one of the founders of the four madhhabs or schools of Islamic law in the 9th century, and he is basically the forefather of ISIS and all these guys. He takes the Quran literally and follows it, and as well as the statements in the hadith of Muhammad. So what you're seeing now is a lot of Muslims are saying, well, we're done with this so-called synthesis. We don't care what this, the ulama or the scholars of Islam have said or done. All we care about is what is the Quran, the words of God or Allah say, and what is Muhammad, his sunnah, his example, as captured in the hadith say. Now, when you do that, when you distill Islam to those two sources, you get ISIS. Because, in fact, what the Quran says literally and what Muhammad especially did is just pure barbaric violence and enslavement, rape, destruction of churches, everything you see, killing blasphemers, killing the apostate, conquering the entire world, going to a carnal heaven and so forth. If you kill yourself, fighting for Allah. So if you want a reformation in Islam, well, you got it. And it's basically what you're seeing today. But you see, going back to the relativistic way of thinking, people have this presupposition, especially secular people, that, you know, all religions preach the same thing. So by reformation, we just mean we want them to calm down and kind of be cool. Well, that's not the case with what Protestantism was. Protestantism just kind of, you know, got rid of the clerical authority and just went to scripture. Well, if Muslims do that, you get ISIS.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Islam research specialist Raymond Ibrahim in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. As thanks for your gift and support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you Raymond Ibrahim's book, Crucified Again. Just call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271, or just visit online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically subjugated under the Islamic way. In Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Ibrahim explains that if the mainstream media were to report honestly on the persecution of Christians under Islam, the obvious implications that Islam is dangerously hostile to all non-Muslims would be inescapable. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org.